Over the next 10 minutes or so, I'm going to talk you through results from a study on the non-responsiveness of maize and soybean across various African agro-ecosystems that we carried out in collaboration with Columbia University and was sponsored by the National Science Foundation. This is also being prepared for a publication that will be submitted later this year. But first, a bit of background and the perspective on this study. In 2006, the African Union took on the resolution to boost agricultural productivity by expanding fertilizer use. And this graph of FAO data shows that countries that managed to increase the fertilizer use did increase the productivity of maize, compared to, for example, Mozambique, where fertilizers are much less used. Now, at the same time, it dawned that in many cases, farmers or producers do not receive a satisfactory response to fertilizers, which is actually represented below the diagonal line of this. This is from a paper from Kihara. He took the African Soil Information System and FAO data, long-term data from 350 locations across sub-Saharan Africa, and actually shows that between 25% and 20% did not even give a positive yield increase. Now, together with the awareness on non-responsiveness to fertilizer comes a whole lot of questions about the prevalence and also what are the causes. Together with that, you have to ask the question about the definition of non-responsiveness. Is it in terms of food security, agronomy and efficiency, or economics? Next to that, you also have how representative are these estimates for gradients across climates, soil type, land slope, texture, and management history that, as the previous presenter showed, differ from neighbor to neighbor. And lastly is the diagnosis, so the sampling related to those gradients, the covariate analysis to be able to identify the causes, and then also the statistics, the least favorite topic of many researchers, unfortunately. So this NSF project was a first of its kind and specifically designed to address the questions that we touched upon earlier. So a strategic selection of four study sites was made in major cereal legume growing regions from in four different countries shown there on the map at the right hand side, about 100 square kilometers large. In them we randomly picked between 20 and 40 farmers' fields that belonging to four different domains, consisting of two soil classes, soil texture classes, and two land slope classes. In each of the farms, we laid out four treatments consisting of maize, soybean crops without and with commonly recommended fertilizer rates. Soybean was also inoculated. The trials were repeated over two seasons, and for each trial we collected soil and plant samples on which we ran a whole batch of analysis that we come back to later. Now, results, the most interesting of all. So here you see these are response graphs where you see the non-fertilized yield in the x-axis, the fertilized yield in y-axis, for maize on top, soybean on the bottom, for the Kenya and Congo side on the left, Tanzania, Nigeria on the right. The solid diagonal line shows the absolute non-responsiveness, so no response whatsoever, while the dashed lines show you each time a step of a fertilizer response that is related to value cost ratio of 1 for the fertilizer itself. Now, let me flip my slide here. So what did the linear mixed modeling tell us from these results is that there was a significantly higher response to NPK in the Kenya site as compared to all others, irrespective of growing season, that is, with a difference in fertilizer response amounting to 0.5 a ton compared to Tanzania, 0.9 ton difference with the Nigeria site, and a whopping 1.2 tons per hectare difference compared to the DR Congo site. Fertilizer rates are the same. Varieties, excuse me, I forgot to tell, those are the best local hybrid varieties for maize available at the market, same with soybean. So actually what farmer, the farmer conditions to say. Now looking still for maize, we saw that there were a significant difference in NPK responses between the two growing seasons in Tanzania and Congo that amounted to 750 tons per hectare. So big seasonal effect. While in Kenya and Nigeria, there were none. But as you see, Nigeria performed actually, for maize, performed very, very poorly. Now for soybean, on the other hand, what did we see? The mixed effect modeling show that the PK responses in Kenya and Nigeria were significantly lower compared to Congo and Tanzania. Keep in mind what maize did. So, and those differences ranged from 140 to 220 kilograms per hectare. For soybean, that is already quite something. And they were significant. They tested significantly. Then on seasonal effects in Tanzania, we saw a significant variation in the PK responses between the two seasons of about 200 kilograms. That is later that we can relate to rainfall. Come back to that later. So these, if you compare the maize and soybean, same fields, same seasons, you see a huge interaction of the crop type with the effect of site and season. It's very important that we don't just draw the line straight for any crop. Now, the next, we actually, from this data set, went on to estimate the prevalence of non-responsiveness. Right? Policymakers don't want to hear too complicated things, just percentages. That's more than enough. But how do we estimate that? In the two graphs on the side, I won't go too much in detail. The black points show you the empirical data measured for both seasons. The gray band around it is the confidence interval based on the variation between farmers' fields. Now, you could say, we just take the percent, the occurrence, because this is cumulative frequency. You can just read it from there. Now, this is statistically not really sound, because non-responsiveness, as you see, is actually an event occurring in which is not so probable, which is occurring in the tail of distributions, and therefore you can't use a normal distribution, because the normal distribution tells you a lot about the mean but not about the extremes. For insurance companies use something called like extreme value distributions, and we fitted a Laplace double exponential function through these empirical data, that's the white line, which gives you information about the median, the dispersion, so actually the broader, simply put, the broader that line, the more risky it is. You can maybe have a higher mean, but you can have in some cases a very low or a very high response, in which case maybe your rate is too high and not efficient as well. So, and as well, the fit allows you to estimate the uncertainty on the prevalence. This is summarized in these two tables. For maize on top, soybean on the bottom, for fertilizer response classes that again relate to a value cost of 1. On top is the absolute non-responsiveness, no whatsoever. For maize, 1 ton increase across all of the sites corresponds to a value cost of 1. For soybean, that is 0.3 ton per hectare, where you get a break even on your investment. Now, again, my here, I put it together. So for maize, it stands out that in DR Congo and Nigeria, the absolute non-responsiveness is greater than the other sites. Then then as well, the NPK inputs in those two sites did not increase by more than 1 ton per hectare in 60 to 80% of the cases. So the 1 ton, which means that the investment on fertilizer was not returned, hence posing a huge risk to the livelihood of farmers that would invest in it and the agriculture intensification in those sites. For soybean, again, see how different the picture is, especially for Congo, Kenya. You see that for soybean, the absolute non-responsiveness was greatest in Kenya and Nigeria, and that PK inputs did not increase yields by more than 300 kilograms per hectare, again in about 60 to 80% of the farms, related to a loss on investment. Now, this is the part for prevalence. The next part of the study focused on understanding, or trying to understand. We're not going to claim we understand everything, but trying to understand the causes for this non-responsiveness. This table summarizes all of the covariates we collected, ranging from rainfall, cumulative rainfall retrieved from chirps, as well as rainfall irregularity, that is actually the residual variance from a normal distribution of your rainfall over the growing season. The charts were shown earlier. Next to that, we measured soil texture by sedimentation this time. I forgot to mention that earlier stratification was done based on remote sensing soil texture, and slope was retrieved from DEM. Next to pH, exchangeable cations, extractable P, and total carbon and nitrogen. So, but first we want to have a look at those that stratification of our trials and the sampling we carried out, and the fertilizer responses, that is, for each soil texture class, that, careful, differ between, and the thresholds and the cutoff between those classes are different for each site. To get a balanced representation, we took a certain cutoff, and then also the land slope classes. Mixed effect modeling showed us that is for the effect of soil texture, that there were marginally insignificant differences in the NPK responses of maize between the texture classes in the low slope domain for Kenya and Congo, designated by those boxes. They were marginally insignificant. Again, we are talking of not that many points as well. Our friend had like thousands of trials. I envy you. For Tanzania, we actually saw that there was a significantly lower PK response of soybean, that is, on high clay soils for slopes greater than 5%. Now, looking at the effects and the differences between slope classes within a soil texture class, we see that the NPK response for maize on a high slope tends to be greater on low slope for low clay soils, though the difference was marginally insignificant. And for soybean, there were usually lower lower responses on croplands with high slopes. Now, since time is short, we go to the covariate analysis, where we used partial least square regression to identify the importance of variables. Maybe let me not go through to it too much. Here for maize, this is the diagnostic plot showing the full model fit between measured fertilizer responses of maize and predicted, which is not all too bad, I would say. You see, this is the best what we could get. Now, the table on the right summarizes the importance measure from PLSR on three components. Where you see that actually the exchangeable potassium, land slope, and magnesium come out as strongest, being most strongly related to the difference in fertilizer response. We ran ordinary linear regression with those three variables. And from that, actually, the first to point out is that slope, we found a positive relationship, which is counterintuitive. We're still working on that. But let's focus on magnesium and calcium. The 3D plot at the bottom shows you that with increasing soil potassium and magnesium, we saw increase in fertilizer responses. Again, for potassium, you would say we applied K, still you get a positive relationship. Do know that the critical level for potassium is 0.8 centimole charge per kilogram, and we are actually, 0.5, excuse me, and most of them fall below. So we have an indication, or strong indication in my view, that potassium and magnesium deficiency are likely causes of non-responsiveness in maize. Also note here, we explained actually 37% of the variability in maize responses with the three variables, 25% just potassium, magnesium. First to that, I just want to quickly show here as well the ear leaf diagnosis. This is from another set of experiments where we applied further inputs. So what we see here, you do see a response in contents of K in maize leaf when you apply NPK, further substantiating that K was deficient. This is in Kenya, Congo. You don't see it, but when we added lime, the K went up for some funny reason. There's no K in lime. Also, the scatter plot up there shows a weak, though slightly positive relationship between the NPK response and K response in leaf. Now, for soybean, the picture is different. Look at this diagnostic plot. Our PLSR, actually, the 17 covariates we plugged in there, actually don't really give a good prediction. So we don't want to overplay those results too much because of a poor fit. CN ratio came out and rainfall irregularity. Seems that soybean is actually tends to be more susceptible to rainfall irregularity. So with that, I thank you and open floor for questions on that.
Okay. So I would have thought pH was going to be the cause of all this, and it's way down there, so that doesn't make sense.
That doesn't make sense.
No.
But pH is a combination of many, like your exchangeable cations and many. So here we look at the range of pH across our site, ranged from maybe a very low in Nigeria, which it was actually 4.8, to let's say 5.5. Again, for everyone, 5.5 is already too low. Okay. So maybe we're, again, all looking at very low pH ranges and therefore not seeing. Again, for me, I do think the pH is a resultant of your cations and so on. Maybe Cheryl wants to add to that, or?
Do
okay. Another thing, we use TSP, triple super phosphate. In a way, actually, a lower pH can make the P the solubilization of the P better. So I don't disagree with you, but again, yeah, the range of pH was, I think, only for Nigeria we got this very low 4 point, and majority was indeed hovering about the critical level. I think the lady was first.
Did you source the inputs from the same source that the farmers with themselves have access to, or did you provide them?
These are researcher-managed trials, okay. And we sourced it from the most reliable source, and also tested them and okay. made sure we got the right stuff. Yeah.
So I can imagine somebody looking at this and saying, oh, you know, Nigeria is not responsive to fertilizer or whatever, let's change our policy accordingly. Would that be appropriate? Like, do you think that the sampling within each country was representative or...
Okay, we're not scaling this on a country level. I call it sites because maybe in the agroecosystem and in that belt, we can say something. For Nigeria, in a way, we are not showing, I showed you quickly we had actually in the second generation of trials, which we don't present here, the results, but we had a deep tillage management. And in Nigeria, it increased next to manure, so it was a stacked or staggered design. Manure increased it in Nigeria, but the deep tillage really had a huge effect. You could, if I would have shown the texture, you would in Nigeria. What I showed was just 0 to 15, measured also 15 to 30. You see this clay alluviation. Trickled down in the soil over time, and because of the shallow tillage, you get actually a hard pan. And I did it manually, that deep tillage, you hit concrete at 15 centimeters. So, and funny enough, I heard that commercial farmers in Nigeria do the ripping, as you call it here.
Do you think a policymaker would try to, or are you careful to say don't draw a countrywide conclusion? We aren't making that claim.
From the other trials, we can make the claim for Nigeria, rip the hell out of once. I'm not saying every time. Once we in Nigeria and for the generation 2 trials were only one season, but I think for what I read, usually ripping is done once and then left. Even no-till, and really brings up the together with organic resource management, of course. Without it, we don't know what the effect is. But with the manure, we got an extra boost, especially for soybean as well, which lacks soybean. And again, with the CN ratio, we're still battling why. Although if I would show you the plot, just measured CN ratio with soybean, you kind of get a good thing. I think soybean is also the decomposition and the amount of active and labile carbon and manure. Why does soybean actually respond so well to manure? I believe it's really reliant on a healthy soil microbial community as well.